Hello everyone, and welcome back to the X-Cast. As ever, the truth is in here. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and thank you for joining us for this, which is our episode all about the 8th episode of the 3rd season of The X-Files, Oubliette. And it's my great pleasure to say hello to Brandon Shea Mutella. Hello.
Nobody's going to spoil us.
Oh, had to go there, didn't you? Immediately. Yeah, nice to talk to you. Our paths haven't crossed before, so yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, this is the first time we've ever had to podcast or anything together. A few tweets once went back and forth, but yeah. First time face-to-face, it's good to meet you.
Absolutely, and we've got an interesting episode to discuss, I think, anyway. So, yeah, we're here to discuss Oubliette, which originally aired on the 17th of November, 1995. It was written by Charles Grant Craig and directed by Kim Manners. And in this episode, a young girl is kidnapped. Mulder and Scully investigate when it becomes apparent that another woman, once held captive by the same man, has a connection to his new victim. All right, Brandon. So, marks out of 10, I suppose. What do you make of Oubliette?
I think this is a really strong episode. I've always really loved it, and I think it's a really underrated episode and one that's not talked about a lot. And I think, like, this is what The X-Files is for me. So, for me, this is a 10 out of 10 episode. I really love this episode a lot.
That's amazing, because I was deliberating about whether to give this one a 10 out of 10 as well. And I thought, maybe that's, like, over-egging it a bit too much. But no, I mean, this is one of my very favorite episodes, I think. So, yeah, I'm with you. 10 out of 10. I think it's incredibly, like, powerful.
This sums up the show for me, you know, like a really intriguing case, you know, with a really spooky concept and wonderful actors and beautiful settings and beautiful scenery. Like, this completely sums up the X-Files for me in this episode.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was going to say, which is, like, you know, it's so well performed pretty much across the board, I think, you know, and it's so rich in, like, atmosphere. Yeah, this one just really, it really lands for me. It really hits home, you know. And the episode's director, obviously, the late, great Kim Manners, he talked a bit about, like we were saying, about the performances and stuff. And his quote about this one was, "We worked very, very hard, all of the directors on The X-Files anyhow, to find the nuances to make the performances real." And I think that's really true, isn't it? They really do feel, like, authentic and genuine, the performances here.
That woman that plays Lucy, like, my favorite scene is when she's eating the soup and the conversation that she's having with Mulder. You know, they're talking about her past. Mulder's asking her if she's using drugs again. Like, her reaction and then that cook's reaction that's behind her, like, that is spot on. Like, I believe these characters 100% when I'm watching them.
It's interesting because, yeah, she's a fascinating figure. I have heard some fans, you know, over the years and stuff, people not really been into her performance and stuff. I just don't understand it because I think she's terrific, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can see the pain in her face, you know, especially even in the teaser when you see her working in that restaurant and that coworker of hers is ragging on her. You get the impression that this is a frequent occurrence for her at this job. And, you know, kind of the way she, like, rolls her eyes, it's like, okay, again, I got to hear this, people complaining about my work abilities. And I don't know, she's 100%, this is a believable character.
And I think David Duchovny is especially good too in this one, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so just a bit of trivia. I mean, the title people might be wondering about. The word Oubliette means a secret dungeon with access only for a trapdoor in its ceiling. So obviously, you know, people will see the connection there. But it's derived from a word, oublier, O-U-B-L-I-E-R, which means to forget. So, I mean, that's obviously relevant in terms of this episode and the whole series, really. You know, the importance of, like, memory and trauma and stuff is, like, massive to The X-Files, isn't it?
Absolutely it is.
And this is an interesting one because the writer, Charles Grant Craig, this is his only script for the series, and I believe he even left the series before this episode went into production, you know. So I'm wondering whether, like, maybe Chris Carter or somebody did a big rewrite on it. Whatever the case, I mean, a really, like, you know, strong episode to be associated with, isn't it, if it's your only one?
Yeah, absolutely, hands down. One of the really neat things, I don't know if it boils down, I don't know where the division lies between, like, editing choices and directing choices in a show like this, but you know, it is really well directed and really well edited as well. I mean, that scene when the woman and the girl are running, you know, and the frantic back and forth editing that's happening between that, and especially at the end when she's drowning, you know, like, it's really amazing and really adds to the suspense of the episode. Is that, I wonder if that's a choice that Kim Manners made or whoever was editing it made. I'm not sure. Or if that was written that way. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? It'd be really good to, like, get a hold of, like, the shooting script for this one and see, you know, how it was laid out there, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Because apparently this was, like, quite a rough shoot, you know. I think because there was a lot of exterior shooting, I think they had, like, issues with filming in the water and around the water and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like Kim Manners had quite a rough time, but whether they, like, enjoyed themselves making this or not, the location work there was, like, pretty stunning, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and lots of that good old, like, Vancouver rain, which really just adds to stuff, doesn't it? Adds to things. There's a woman who's written about this episode, or she touched on this episode in an essay she wrote. Her name was Elizabeth Kubek, and I just thought I'd read out this quote, because I like what she had to say about this episode, which was, while the voyeur Carl Wade represents a symbolic logic of duplication, the girls he kidnaps are the same age, and he photographs them obsessively, Mulder is able to resist reading Amy, Lucy, and Samantha as simple equivalents. He denies that his sympathy for Lucy is strictly related to his sister's loss, and suggests that Lucy's death is an escape as well as an exchange. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I just really like the idea that this is a great character piece, not just for Mulder, but for, you know, Lucy as well emerges as a real character, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And, I mean, we'll come on to touch on, like, the Samantha parallels as well when we get there. I mean, what would you guess, if you had to guess, Brandon, on IMDb, what do you think people over there would give this one?
I'm going to guess that this is probably in the mid-range, because it's not one that people talk about, so I'd probably be guessing, you know, 7 to 8 range.
Yeah, well, it got 7.9 out of 10, mm-hmm. and as of the time of recording this, that was from 2,481 ratings. 24 episodes in Season 3, and this came equal 15th, which seems really low to me.
Yeah, absolutely. That is pretty low. But that's, it's one of those ones that people, I think it falls under the wayside, because, you know, people really talk about their love of the X-Files, and you get those fans that are really mythology-based fans, and those people that are Monster of the Week fans. And this isn't a Monster of the Week, it's just a traditional paranormal case. And you don't get people talking about, oh, my favorite ones are the simple paranormal ones. You know, they kind of put them into the two categories of what the X-Files means. And for me, this is what the X-Files means, the paranormal cases, and these are the ones that I really like to watch. You know, the last time I was on this podcast for an episode review was with Tony, and we were covering Aubrey, you know, and so it's a very similar, there's similar themes and whatnot in those episodes a bit, you know, with these psychic connections and stuff. And, well, I personally, I mean, I don't know if you're going to ask me this at the end, I don't necessarily believe in psychic activity myself, you know, and I don't think that you can just suddenly reproduce water in your lungs. It's still a captivating story, and this is what I like to watch in the X-Files.
I was wondering whether there are more reasons why this one's held maybe in lowish regard. Because, I mean, I do think there are people like us who are really into it, but I think, generally speaking, like you say, it's not one you hear a lot about. But I wonder if it's just because it's so, like, uncompromising. Do you know what I mean? It's quite a tough watch, isn't it? And it's really powerful, but, you know, I can see why people wouldn't derive, like, a lot of enjoyment from this, even, you know, even though I do, and it sounds like you do as well.
Well, that's the one of the things that I find, you know, frustrating about Trek FM that I'm on, and the episodes that they talk about when they talk about in their reviews. And there's episodes of, like, Star Trek Voyager and Next Generation I think are amazing episodes, but they're not easy episodes to watch. You know, like the episode Violations from the Next Generation, when there's that psychic rape that's happening on Troy, and I can't remember the name of it, but there's an episode in Voyager where the Doctor convinces Seven of Nine that she's been assaulted. And Seven of Nine has no memory of it. And it's they're both challenging episodes to watch, but they're not ones that people talk about because they aren't fun episodes to watch, you know? Mm. Like, this isn't Jose Chung's From Outer Space or Anasazi, like, that, you know, they're either the comedic or the exciting action ones. It is a challenging one to watch because this is a more believable crime. you know, that could be investigated, you know, like, I haven't seen this episode since I've had children, but, you know, I've got a young 7-year-old daughter, and, you know, I can't help but think about something, thinking about my daughter in a situation like this when I'm watching an episode like this, and how traumatic that would be for me. But, I mean, that doesn't take away from the episode. That maybe even enhances it for me, because I can see how terrible of a crime it is, even more so than I used to be able to when I was, you know, in my mid-20s, probably the last time I saw this.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what also enhances it is, like we say about Lucy, she's such a great character, but she's a complex character, isn't she? She doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, you can't really pigeonhole her that easily. She's kind of got this prickly demeanor. You feel enormous sympathy for her, but things aren't necessarily clear cut in this episode. You know, the episode doesn't have massive set pieces or anything. It's quite, there's a bit of suspense, but it's quite unshowy in that respect. So I wonder if that's all kind of mixed in with why people would rate this one fairly lowly. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think, Brandon, now it's time for our in-depth scene-by-scene look at this episode, Oubliette. So the episode begins, the teaser sequence, at a high school in Seattle, Washington, doesn't it? And we see all these students being photographed. Well, I mean, we see Amy Jacobs, don't we? 15 years old, played by an actress, Jewel State. I mean, how familiar are you with her from other stuff?
Well, I know her from Firefly, but that's about it. I'm not the biggest Firefly fan. Like, I think it was hyped up too much for me when I finally got to it, you know, so to me, Firefly is just an average show, because I think so many people were talking about how awesome it was, and I got there and I'm like, yeah, it's fine. So but other than that, I don't know what else she's really been in. So
yeah, I don't think I've seen her in anything else. I know she gets, whenever you mention this episode, people mention her name. Like you say, Firefly is the one I would associate her with, even though I haven't seen it myself. I think she had a recurring role in Stargate Atlantis.
Okay.
But again, I never saw that series. I mean, she's good here, isn't she? She's good. She does what she has to do very well, I think.
Yeah, and she's pretty young in this. Like, she's got to be, you know, 15, 16 years old right at this time, hey?
The character's 15, I think. I think she may even be a year or two younger. I think maybe the character's name, I think I read this, that the character's name was, the character's age was increased from whatever the original plan was. I think there was a real-life case they wanted to avoid some parallels with, I think.
Okay.
But anyway, I mean, we see the photographer's assistant, don't we? Carl Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Played by a guy, Michael, I think it must be Chiefo or Chiefo, Chieffo. And I mean, we see immediately, don't we? He's kind of distracted or almost like infatuated, it seems, with Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to his like dark room, I guess you'd call it. You know, it's illuminated by this red light. And I mean, there's lots and lots of like really striking use of the color red in this episode all the way through, really, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there is. And the, you know, the dark room and like what he's doing in there is such a spooky, like spooky thing, where you get his motivation right off the bat with very few words from him. He wants to be with these beautiful girls. He's a shy person, and you know, to set his photo next to hers and then take photos of that, it's really, really spooky. But you get his motivation right off the bat.
And I also like the touch that, you know, they could have easily made him the photographer in the opening scene, but he's the assistant, isn't he?
Yeah, not very good assistant.
Yeah, exactly. He's in this kind of subservient role. I think it just kind of enhances when you do see him wielding the camera later. It kind of enhances it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he cuts out photos of Amy, doesn't he? Puts his own image next to her and photographs it. So then the camera kind of ascends, and we realise it's in some kind of basement room, and this is like the oubliette of the title, isn't it? So we see Amy and her sister asleep in their bed. He enters through the window, Carl does. He takes Amy. Nobody's going to spoil us, is what he says. And we'll hear that refrain a few times in this episode, won't we?
Mm-hmm.
It takes kind of a left turn. We see Lucy at the restaurant she works at, played by Tracy Ellis. I think you've alluded to this scene already, but like she collapses with a nosebleed. And she also says, nobody's going to spoil us. And we sort of come out of the teaser. We see it's 10:05 p.m. there at the restaurant, which is the same time as it was at the kidnapping.
Because at that point, you know, it's not an X-File, it's just an abduction, right? So they've added this parallel of what's going on between her and the words that she's saying, and the time specifically, to show you that this is now a paranormal case. You know, because up until then, it could be just anything. You might be like, well, why are we watching this case like this, right?
Absolutely. But I mean, overall, I think this is a great little teaser. And it sets up, you know, like we said, the red light, the oubliette setting. It sets it all up nicely, doesn't it? And really intriguing, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pick up after the credits. We're at Amy's house. Like, I presume this is the following day. So, I mean, it's interesting that immediately Mulder turns up alone, doesn't he? It's very much seems very much a signal to me that, you know, this is his episode. This is a Mulder piece, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because they're usually always together. And it's, you know, it's a little bit into it where he says to Scully that he forgot his cell phone. And it's like, that's something that, like, doesn't happen anymore. You know, people are so joined with their cell phones. But it's interesting at that time where a device like that's not foremost on his mind. But he's so interested in this case that he is going to rush out of his house without it. And that's his primary contact device with Scully when they're on the road.
Yep. It's just kind of like, sounds like it was kind of drop everything and get to the scene, doesn't it? So, mm-hmm. I mean, he has a bit of a look around. He enters the girl's room to talk and he sees Amy's mother there. I think it's interesting. This is in kind of a POV shot where we're seeing from Mulder's point of view, which we don't see a huge amount of on the X-Files. But I think, again, it just aligns us with Mulder for this one. And there's a great moment, isn't there? What did you think of this? Where she says to him, the mother says, "How could you really know how I feel?"
Yeah, that's it's something I just noticed recently as well. Like, it's kind of a cliche line where people say that. Like, you're offering sympathy to somebody, and they have this person writing this line or saying this line. Well, how could you possibly know? And we know that he does know exactly what she's going through, right? But mm-hmm. he's not going to sit there and compare tragedies with her and be like, "Oh, I know exactly what's going on because my sister and blah blah blah," you know. And I don't know. Like, I don't understand why that kind of line is written for a character. Because, I don't know, people take offense at stuff when they shouldn't take offense. He's just offering sympathy for her and whatnot, and she's interrupting him. But, you know, it shows her frazzled state of mind that she's in as well, I think.
It's really interesting, because I think there have been other episodes where he's quite quick to give out the backstory about Samantha to other people, you know. He can be quite open about it. So this is an interesting counterpoint where he doesn't mention Samantha in any moment until Scully brings her up, and it's like much, much later on. It's like about half an hour into the episode, I think.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But of course, we'll come on to that in due course. So I think in terms of the plot here, there's some blood on the carpet. We meet the special agent in charge. He turns up to give a bit of exposition. I think you get the impression like the investigation's not going anywhere fast, but he kind of gives Mulder the okay to talk to Lucy, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah, the medical center is where we are next. Scully turns up. Yeah, Mulder forgot his cell phone, as we talked about. And we get, don't we, a bit of history from about Lucy. She's a kidnapped victim. She was taken at age 8, you know, so she was younger than Amy. She was missing for years, I think, is what they said.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah, and the abductor was never caught, obviously. So they go in to see Lucy, and yeah, I think we should just spend a bit more time on, like, her performance. Tracy Ellis. I mean, just a bit of trivia. I'm sure lots of people will know. She appears again in The X-Files in Season 9 as the title character in Audrey Pauly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I was saying before, it's a complex portrayal, isn't it? Because such a wounded character. But she comes across as quite unsympathetic and quite, you know... how would you describe it exactly, initially, anyway? She's like saying, you know, what's your point? All of us kidnapped victims got to stick together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't immediately jump at the chance to help, does she?
Yeah. See, I don't know if I would call her unsympathetic, but I mean, that's an interesting point of view to take on it, because maybe it's because I know the episode and I know the tragedy that she's been through that, you know, I just see her as a person who's on edge, you know, doesn't like the authorities because we find out about her criminal record and stuff in the past. Right. So maybe I'm colored by having seen the episode so many times, but you know, again, that just falls under the whole category of believability for this character and how much of a believable character she actually is. Because of her history with the police, she's not comfortable in this situation. Because of her abduction, she's not comfortable being trapped in a room against her will. Like, she wants to leave, but they're saying she can't. So when she finally gets the okay to go, she's like, picks up her stuff and goes right to the bathroom to change, you know, without pausing.
Yeah, I mean, unsympathetic is probably the wrong word, but, you know, the way she's portrayed, you know, it does kind of, I think, present some kinds of, what would be the way to put it? Almost like the viewer's got to kind of navigate around the fact that she's not immediately on side, you know. There are these kind of barriers between her and Mulder initially, and they're kind of broken down step by step, aren't they? And it's a really, like, fascinating dynamic as it plays out, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, she says, what I've been through, I wouldn't wish on anybody. Doesn't mean I can make it any better for me or for anyone else. And, you know, I mean, the episode in very, you know, is kind of about that as it goes forward, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, Mulder and Scully tell her she's free to leave whenever she wants to. And then we see her in front of the mirror, and it cuts straight from her to, like, Carl opening his car boot, doesn't it? Kind of Amy's perspective looking up is what it seems like. You know, he's got a flat tire. This tow truck driver turns up to try and help out. This is great exterior shooting here. Great, you know, lots of rain. Very moody. Classic X-Files, it seemed to me.
Yeah, classic Canadian extra, too. Like, you can, just the way that he talks and whatnot, like, you could just, I could hear the Canadian oozing out of his mouth, right? Like, when he, the way he says lunatic, like, I don't know, like, I can hear the Canadian in it.
Yeah, I couldn't really, it's not the kind of thing I'd generally pick up on, you know, but yeah, I'll take your word for it. And, yeah, Carl's kind of annoyed by this guy's insistence, isn't he? He gets mad, he brandishes this tire iron. I mean, what do you think about Carl Wade? I mean, because I think when people talk about, like, the human monsters in the X-Files, you know, quote-unquote human monsters, I think, you know, people will mention, like, Donnie Faster from Irresistible. People like John Lee Roach is the guy from Paper Hearts come up. But again, you don't really hear a great deal about this guy, do you? So do you have any thoughts on, like, this guy's performance and that kind of thing?
I think he's sufficiently creepy for my level of acceptance. But again, I think this is a guy that's not thought of because this is an episode that people just tend to not talk about. Like, Paper Hearts, you know, now that you mention it, like, that's not an easy episode to watch either. You know, like, that's just as challenging as this episode to watch. So I wonder if it's because this episode doesn't get talked about as much because the references to Samantha are not quite so hitting the nail on the head. You know, it's more subtle in this episode. Maybe that's part of the reason that people don't recognize its importance as an episode of the X-Files.
Yeah, I wonder if, because like we say, this guy, the guy who wrote it only wrote one episode. And I have something like Paper Hearts, I guess, people slot it into like Vince Gilligan's, you know, body of work or whatever. Something like Irresistible, people talk about, you know, when they're talking about great Chris Carter episodes. But maybe because this one's kind of an outlier in that respect, I wonder if that's why people don't latch onto it, maybe.
Possibly.
But I mean, what I think about this guy, Wade, because someone like Donnie Faster in Irresistible, I think when I talked on the podcast about that episode, what I said was like, you know, he's a very memorable antagonist and everything, but I find it quite hard to believe he'd like coast through life undetected, you know, Faster. Whereas with this guy, Wade, and with the guy in Paper Hearts, I completely believe, no questions asked, that, you know, he could, like, stay under the radar and not attract attention to himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because he is so quiet, and he's not really creepy-looking. You know, like, Donnie Faster kind of has that creepy tone of voice and that creepy look to him. But this guy, he's just got an average Joe look, and, you know, he's got an average Joe voice, and, you know, he can definitely slide under the radar for sure.
Yeah, because I think, like, Donnie Faster becomes kind of like a slasher film kind of villain by the end of Irresistible. You know, he's kind of spitting out catchphrases and stuff. And I don't think Carl Wade does. In many ways, I think that's also very, very unsettling, you know, the way they portray him here.
No line like, girly girl.
Not quite. all right, the FBI field office. We get some backstory about Lucy's criminal record. You know, Mulder's saying, you know, he just doesn't think she's involved, you know. Scully makes a connection about blood types. So the evidence is kind of pointing towards that Lucy may have Amy's blood on her. Mm-hmm. Or Lucy may have had Amy's blood on her, you know, when she collapsed. I'll tell you one reason why I think people maybe have a few issues with this episode. I think I've heard a bit of back and forth about this in the past, is like Scully's role. You know, I seem to remember seeing some comments in the past that, you know, perhaps she's too unfeeling or something. But, I mean, to me, it just seemed like she was following the evidence in front of her. I don't know how you saw it.
It's interesting because I'm a little conflicted with her role in this episode because she is just following the evidence trail, but she does seem a little more detached than normal from the episode. Like, she is going about it in a straight path, you know, and usually she's a little more receptive to Mulder's point of view. And in this episode, she really doesn't seem that receptive to what he wants to say. And she is really boiling it down to his, you know, the past with his sister, and she's almost being dismissive of it, where he's got this hunch, you know, one of these hunches that Mulder has, that it's that there is some type of deep connection. I don't think it takes away from the episode at all, but it is kind of a conflicting point of view that we don't normally see Scully in.
Yeah, I don't think it takes away from it, because, you know, I don't think every episode necessarily has to be a Scully showcase, but, like, I can see that another way to kind of set this one up would be to have Scully kind of reflecting on her abduction, for example, wouldn't it? I don't, you know, when people raise it as an issue, I think it is a valid point for discussion, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're at the Bright Angel halfway house. Lucy's in bed, shivering. You know, this guy, I didn't catch his name, but he brings her a blanket. He notices cuts on her face, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's saying stuff like, why is it dark? I can't see. And then we cut to Amy in the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really terrifying moment, I thought, here. I don't know about you, but it's when Carl kind of appears. I don't know what you call it. It's like the peephole, or it's like this slat that's been opened where he can look through and his eyes appear.
Yeah, chills. It gets me every time watching the episode. Like, I watched it twice to prepare for this, and I jumped both times. Like, yeah, Mark Snow's music, and, you know, just the way that the eyes just pop into frame there, you know. Like, yeah, it definitely works.
Yeah. So, I think the next couple of scenes are at the halfway house, too. You know, Mulder is there. He sees Lucy's kind of being examined by a medic. He talks to her in the kitchen. I think what's really interesting in this scene is, like, she just really doesn't want to engage. She won't look at him in the eye. And I think if you notice in, like, all the subsequent scenes, she kind of gradually relaxes in his presence. I thought it was really well done, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said earlier, this is my favorite scene in it. Like, the way she's just, you know, hunched over that bowl, you know, slurping it up, answering his questions and whatnot. And you can see in this scene that Mulder isn't, you know, he's not blind to what's going on. He's not blind to who this woman is. And he's asking the right questions, you know. Are you using your drugs again? Right? You know, things like this. Like, he's aware of the situation. He's aware of this person's history. He's done his investigative work on it. Right? And that shows in this scene.
I mean, I really do think this is one of Duchovny's best performances in the entire series, really. I know he gets some criticism for his acting that's justified at times, but this is really good. And he just seems to be really good in these episodes, these situations where Mulder's required to be really empathetic. I'm thinking of stuff like Mind's Eye, Seinen's Eye Closure. He just manages to, like, tap into the emotions required, and he almost seems to approach them in a really, like, heartfelt way.
Yeah, I don't, like, I've never had an issue with Mulder's acting. You know, going back on the series, like, I've been following along with the X-Cast, watching the episodes. It's been a really long time since I've done an X-Files watch through. And, you know, certain episodes where people say he's calling it in, I almost don't even notice it. And maybe it's a nostalgia that I have for the show from my teenage years. But even episodes like Excelsis Day, like, to me, that's just Mulder. You know, like, that's just his character and his actor. The episodes like this, where it is more personal with him, we do get this softer Mulder. But I don't know, like, I've never really noticed Mulder, or David Duchovny, sorry, phoning it in myself. So I'm trying to watch for that a little closer now as we go along.
Yeah, well, I personally think it doesn't really become too apparent until, like, the Los Angeles years.
Okay.
Like, six and seven, I think you can discern it a bit more there, especially some of the episodes in seven.
Okay.
But what's fascinating is, like, when he gets a really good script, even at that stage, he kind of really turns it on, you know. So it's kind of variable, I think, week to week a bit.
Well, then I'll be thrilled to be watching out for that when we finally get there on the X-Cast in 2035.
Something like that, yeah, the way it's going. Where are we? So we see Amy again, and here's another creepy moment. It's when she's, you know, she's in a dungeon in the darkness, and that red light appears on the wall, mm-hmm. you know, and then you suddenly realize that he's taking photos of her. It reminded me a little, I don't know if you ever saw the film, it's from 1960, a British film, Peeping Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an amazing, amazing film.
It's a fascinating film. It kind of ended the director Michael Powell's career, almost, you know. Mm-hmm. And this scene is such a disorienting little moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because she doesn't quite know what's going on, right? And, you know, even her reaction, like, just her startled reaction when the flash goes off, you know, she's like, she's just shocked and doesn't know what's going on, right?
Yeah. Okay, and then, I mean, another interesting scene with Scully and Mulder, where they're watching the video, aren't they, of Lucy
mm-hmm.
Taking the week she was found, where she's kind of, like, struggling and, led on the floor. She's kind of hypersensitive to light. Her language skills, they say, are not very well developed. This is obviously from years ago.
Mm-hmm. I love the addition of these kinds of videos to an episode. Like, they really enhance it and give the episode depth and history. You know, like, the other one that I was thinking of is that video in the season 10 episode where it was all the kids with the body defects, you know, and they had that video of the past. And, you know, they've done it quite a few times in the X-Files, but I really like seeing that. Like, it adds so much to the episode, and it's such a world-building element with something so simple as, you know, an interview video, right? Like a recorded history video.
Yeah, I guess the ones that spring to mind for me are, like, sometimes you see, like, Mulder's hypnosis sessions or Jeffrey Spender's regression sessions and stuff like that. Yeah, like, you're right, definitely. I think so. Right, so Scully has found a lead. So she's kind of discovered some stuff about Carl Wade. She's found out he was fired from his job, you know, and Mulder wants his photo to show to Lucy. But then we're back at Carl's house, you know. I love the way his house is kind of lit through this episode, you know.
Very dark.
Yeah, but you get these, like, beams of light kind of running through the house, like these shafts of light, don't you? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, here, he leaves in the car. He's off into town, it looks like, and Amy kind of sees an opportunity to escape, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of, like, cross-cutting back and forth here. So then we're with Mulder and Lucy. And, yeah, there's a moment where, like, Mulder touches her, and she's like, whoa, don't touch me. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's stuff like that in this episode that feels very, like, authentic and genuine, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Because, again, even there, it adds so much to her past. Like, you know, it's never really explained what happened to her. You know, we're given the impression that it's very similar to what happened to Amy. You know, the same type of abduction where maybe he never finally raped her or anything like that. I don't know if he ended up raping Lucy while she was in his custody or whatnot. But whether he did or not, you know, I'm thinking at some point, you know, she doesn't like to be touched, like, awkwardly by a man. So, like, I mean, it adds something to the character. Like, I'm guessing the character of Lucy has had a sexual assault at some point in her past, maybe on top of what's occurred with this previous abduction for her as in her youth, you know, with her criminal history and her prostitution history and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I know with Amy, they make a point of saying, like, Carl never touched her. I think they sexually assaulted her. I can't remember exactly how they phrase it. But yeah, I don't remember them explicitly mentioning that with Lucy. That's interesting. I mean, she's saying, like, you know, I was doing okay until all this happened. Just really heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah.
Mulder shows her the photo of Wade, doesn't he? You know, and she kind of leaves. And then this is cut with, you know, Amy escaping the dungeon. I think we go back and forth a few times. You know, because Carl returns, he notices she's got out, and he pursues her into the woods. So there's some real tension here, isn't there, in the woods, you know, this kind of foot chase.
When she's cross-cutting with the running in the city, you know, it's frantic, and it's like she can't control herself. This psychic connection is almost controlling her.
Yeah.
You know, not just what's going on with her body, with bleeding somebody else's blood, or later on with the water, but it's even her actions are sometimes, like, completely overtaken by the psychic connection. I want to go back to something you pointed out there, just because I think it's the importance of the episode and the importance of the character, is when she says, I was doing fine until this happened. And you can see that in her character, and that sums up Lucy so well, because she's in a halfway house, she's got a job, she's cleaned up her life, she's stopped taking drugs, she's passing her clean drug test and whatnot. Like, this is a person who's struggling in her life to get back on track. And this thing that she never asked for starts happening to her. Like, I'm guessing nothing like this has ever happened in her life before. You know, she's never experienced any type of psychic connection because she's completely confused and doesn't understand what's going on. And she says, I was fine until this happened.
Yeah, because there's an interesting, like, detail that's kind of thrown in there at one point. I can't remember exactly where. But they mention, like, an ex-boyfriend she had who's now in prison or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just get the sense, if I don't labour it, but, you know, she must have had a variety of, like, kind of toxic associations through her life, really. And before this happened, it seemed like she, like you say, had kind of extricated herself from a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then Mulder's kind of talking to Lucy about Carl. And like I said, she's now more willing at this point, you know, slightly more willing to kind of meet his eye, sustain some eye contact, you know. And, like, he's putting it to her that she can sort of feel what Amy's going through. And this is the point where Scully and the other agents turn up to arrest Lucy. You know, they've kind of... Scully calls it incontrovertible evidence that she had Amy's blood on her. Lucy obviously bolts. I mean, What do you think about like this connection between Amy and Lucy? Because it's not the most like scientifically grounded of phenomena that we've ever had on the series. I don't think that matters personally.
No, there's lots of stuff in the show that's not believable. This is far from the most unbelievable thing we've seen in the X-Files.
Yeah, well, it's not even so much that it's not believable that they don't really even attempt to put like a scientific veneer on it or anything, do they? I mean, Mulder kind of lays out his hypothesis a bit later, but if you're watching this, you know, the series for the science or whatever, this is not the episode for you, I don't think.
Yeah, and I don't get the impression that Lucy bolted. Like, it's I know that you use the term like she does leave and whatnot, but I got the impression that this is another example of she was under the control of this psychic connection that she got, because she ends up at the house of Wade, right?
She does. That's right. Because is that the next time we see her? It might well be, mightn't it? Because yeah, then we're at the house. You know, it's still just Amy and Carl at this point. He's asking her, like, why did you run away? She's, like, begging him, isn't she, for water? She's, like, she doesn't want to die here. She wants to see her mum, she says, and he doesn't respond. I mean, all this stuff is just kind of devastating, I think. You know, devastating to watch, you know.
And one of the little touches in this scene that I think is one of the most dehumanizing things he does to her is when he's given her the water and he's making her drink it and he forces too much into her, right?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't give her a chance to breathe. Like, it's just, it's this frantic thing that's going through his mind, and that he's almost not seeing her as a person because maybe he's not feeding her properly. Maybe she's, you know, not giving her food and water properly while she's in this cellar.
And, you know, water will become increasingly important as the episode proceeds, won't it? And, you know, the special agent in charge, you know, he's putting out wanted posters with Lucy's face on. You know, Mulder's kind of, I think he sort of advises against that approach, but is ignored. Mm-hmm. You know, his theory is that Lucy may have bled Amy's blood. And then there's this really fascinating exchange between Mulder and Scully, isn't it? I mean, like we said, they disagree. You know, there's a clear, like, opposition between them in their approach to this case. Mulder brings up the notion that some kind of empathic transference has become established between Amy and Lucy. But Scully kind of levels the charge at him, you know, she's sort of saying, you're becoming an empath yourself, and, like, this is the first mention then directly of Samantha, like I say, about 30 minutes in. Yeah, so then Mulder comes back. I think this might be my favourite moment of the episode, actually. So his retort to Scully is like, you don't think I've thought of that? I have. And not everything I do, say, think and feel goes back to my sister. You of all people should realise that sometimes motivations for behaviour can be more complex and mysterious than tracing them back to one single childhood experience. I don't know, it's a great moment, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful line because, you know, people looking from the outside might think this, and, you know, it could very well be that that is the reason for what's going on, but, and I know that characters and people in general have a tough time disassociating themselves from their personal experiences that they've had in their life, but sometimes they actually are able to do it, and it's difficult to see that from the outside, so it is a really wonderful line that Mulder has.
And reportedly, I mean, I don't know this 100% for certain, but reportedly it was a Duchovny ad-lib, those couple of lines there. What I like about it is this exchange, it kind of mirrors almost an exchange that happens right at the beginning of the series, episode 4, Conduit, where Scully says to Mulder, look, stop chasing after your sister. Mm-hmm. And I like that exchange in Conduit because, you know, we're still getting to know the characters, we're still defining who they are. So that sort of more straightforward exchange there is fine. But now we're two or three, you know, 3 seasons in, you know, these actors know these characters inside out now. And I think it's really appropriate that at this point they sort of delve into the psychology a bit more deeply, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what it also does is it means that, you know, if it was just a straightforward, you know, that Amy and Lucy were like Samantha surrogates, they wouldn't necessarily be characters in their own right, would they? They'd just be kind of stand-ins for Mulder's sister, you know. But this exchange makes that more complex. It doesn't, you know, like you say, obviously Samantha's experience might well be kind of underpinning what Mulder's thinking here to some degree, but they're not just, you know, they're not surrogates. They're not just stand-ins for Samantha. They're people in their own right, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so then we meet your, you know, this Canadian tow truck driver again.
Take off, eh?
He's come forward. He's with his encounter, or about his encounter with Wade. So I think they're pieced together. You know, they know where he is, they think. It's the same place Lucy was found like 17 years ago. you know, there's a bit of smart police work here. They decide to check the photography photography store. They know, you know, they think he might have an account there. The next thing we see is, you know, all these agents turning up, you know, in force, you know, quite a few of them at Carl's house, you know. So again, there are these moments of suspense that creep into the episode. You know, this approach to the house is suspenseful, I think, you know. And the trap door is open, we see. Mulder kind of lowers himself into the dungeon, into the oubliette. But Amy's gone, but Lucy, you know, very, very sadly, hasn't been able to escape. You know, she's back in the dungeon once again. She's, you know, she's back where she was all those years ago.
Yeah, it's spooky. Like, when I was watching this episode the second time, you know, watching them back-to-back as quickly as I did, that's when you start to look at the little inconsistencies and like, ah, maybe that doesn't make a little bit quite so much sense, you know? And in this one here, I'm like, would they let Mulder go down alone in there, you know, into this area? Like, it could be dangerous down there. But, you know, but it's spooky to see her in the corner. You think that it might be Amy, and the way they film it, you think it might be her.
Hmm.
And it is kind of a surprise to see Lucy as the person that he pulls out. How did she get there? What's going on?
I mean, at this point, you know, the agents are questioning her, and like that special agent in charge guy is really running out of patience with her, isn't he, at this point? Mm-hmm. So Mulder takes her outside, and she starts to open up to him much more now. So again, it's been coming, isn't it, this kind of her kind of becoming more receptive to his requests and so, you know, his approaches to her.
It's because of the way that he speaks to her, you know, like he's not talking to her in an accusatory way, you know, like this police officer and even Dana Scully are like, you know, I think a lot of it is colored by Lucy's past and the way that they see her, you know, and Mulder, he says that earlier on, like when Scully mentions that she wants to test the blood, he's like, look, I don't want this to get out there because I don't want her to people to think she's a suspect until we have absolute proof that she's a suspect. You know, and I think that a lot of people would jump to the fact that she'd be a suspect simply because of her past.
What I really liked here was, you know, there's kind of a contrast here where, like, Mulder says to her, you're sharing her pain, and, like, now Amy needs some of your strength. You know, I really liked that. A nice couple of lines. So Lucy starts to shiver and cough, and this is the point where Mulder kind of realizes, he kind of intuits that, you know, because of this, he realizes Carl and Amy must be near the river. Lucy, in her own way, is trying to tell him that, he thinks. And then I guess this is, like, the... It's not really the action, it's the kind of the climactic sequences, though, at the river. Amy's being held, she's kind of coughing and gagging like Lucy is. Nobody's going to spoil us, he says again, and he holds her underwater. Again, we're kind of going back and forth to an extent here a few times between Amy and Lucy. Mulder and Scully turn up, Mulder shoots Wade, and they remove Amy from the water. And I don't know what you think, but, like, for all the stuff we said about this may have been a difficult shoot, but... This, like, setting provided, like, a really dramatic backdrop, I thought. Especially, though, when you see, in some of the shots, you see the waters kind of really kind of rushing around, you know, kind of gushing.
Yeah, it's not a little stream. Like, this is a river, a raging river that they're trying to go through with. So it adds tension, it adds drama to it.
It really does, it really does. And the performances do here, don't they? They're very urgent. Especially, like, you know, you get the CPR on Amy. Mulder apparently kind of persisting too much, isn't he, with the CPR. And then we get in the moment, we see Lucy stop breathing just before Amy begins to recover. Then that leads up to another incredibly powerful moment, I think, which when Mulder turns up, it's kind of dark now, isn't it? Night has fallen. He sees Lucy's body. You know, he touches her face, Lucy's dead body, of course. He touches her face as the camera retreats, like, upwards into the sky. I mean, very powerful in the context of this story, you know. Almost even more powerful when you know what happens later in the series, that Mulder's sister will be dead, has been dead all along.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, sorry. Like, whichever way you look at it, whether you directly equate Lucy with his sister or not, whether you think he does or not, it's just incredibly touching, isn't it? Very sad.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I think that Scully... in the episode, gave up on the CPR a little bit too quickly.
Mm.
What do you think?
In TV terms, it seemed that way. I don't know how it works in real life. I don't know if the portrayal of CPR is normally pretty, like, realistic in television drama or what.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, to round off the episode, you know, halfway house again. Mulder's looking at pictures of Lucy as a young girl. We get some of the details, don't we, filled in. You know, Amy's recovering. She's got no injuries. They can't explain it. But the autopsy results on Lucy showed that she did die of drowning. She had, I think, they say 5 litres of water in her lungs, don't they, I think.
Right, yep.
And then we get this nice little back and forth between Mulder and Scully to finish off, where Mulder says, like, you know, she saved Amy's life. And Scully says, whatever there was between them, you were part of that connection. Lucy may have died for Amy, but without you, they never would have found her. Mm-hmm. And Mulder says, I think she died for more than Amy. I think finally it was the only way she could escape. The only way she could forget what happened 17 years ago. The only way she could outrun Carl Wade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the most interesting lines that sums up this episode is when they're talking about the fact that Amy had no marks on her and whatnot after being dragged through the woods. And Scully says, you know, they're just ignoring that for now. That's not what they're focusing on. They're just happy that she's here. They're just ignoring that right now. And that's so believable. Like, this is a thing where something miraculous has happened and they can't acknowledge it because of the opposite end of the tragedy, you know, and how tragic it could have been, and just great, the gratitude for having the daughter back home. I love that line because it just sums up everybody's approach to this the whole time, because nobody believed Mulder's theory. They thought it was lunacy. Mm-hmm. You know, but they don't care. They're not going to explain the 5 liters of water. They're not going to explain the lack of damage to Amy. It's, I don't know, it really sums it up for me.
Yeah. And what do you think about that stuff about Lucy then, where they're like, you know, it's the only way she could escape, the only way she could forget. Like we said, the episode's title sort of comes from this word, which means to forget, you know.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm surprised, like, going back to this, I've seen this episode a lot, and, you know, I watched it last night, and then I watched it again this morning, but last night when I watched it, I'm surprised that Lucy dies in the end, you know, because right before Amy wakes up, Lucy moves her head in the same manner that Amy will then move it in the next shot. So it's like they're both alive, but then we find out that Lucy dies, and it's like, well, did Lucy understand the connection at this point enough to control it that she sacrificed herself to save this little girl?
I don't think it's like necessarily explicit, is it? But I think so. I think it was her choice to die, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's how I choose to interpret the ending, is that she made the choice mm-hmm. to die instead of Amy with the psychic connection, which is, you know, even more tragic of an ending, you know, for this character who's on the right path, trying to, you know, trying to fix her life, trying to get herself on the right path.
Yeah, and very, very poignant, I think. And, yeah, I mean, I guess to sum up, I mean, we're going to go on to the mailbag in a minute, but, yeah, this legitimately is one of my very favourite episodes, you know. And, I mean, part of me wonders whether I'm just kind of rooting for the underdog or something, because, like we say, we both think it's kind of underrated. We both think it's not discussed enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I genuinely do think it stands with the very best that this series has to offer, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as good as Shapes.
I mean, I was wondering how long it would be until that episode came up.
I love Shapes. You did well. Shapes is awesome.
I mean, aside from Shapes, though, this is pretty good stuff, you know.
Yeah. Shapes might be a little better than Shapes.
Maybe. All right, Brandon, if you want, we can dive into the mailbag and see what our, you know, Facebook followers had to say about this episode.
Let's do it.
All right. I mean, we'll just do 5 or 6 of these, I think. And the first one is from Mara Funchen-Jaeger, who said, I love Mulder pointedly telling Scully that not everything I do say, think, and feel goes back to my sister. Up until that point in the episode, much of the audience made me automatically drawing the same parallel that Scully did. Mulder's comment suddenly reshifts the focus and makes it clear to the viewer that not every abduction case is about Samantha. It also makes Mulder more of a sympathetic character in a way, because his drive in solving the case is selfless and comes simply from caring about those involved. I think Scully's season is moved by this as well, inspiring her to make that comment at the end about Mulder's connection to Lucy. And I think that's a good point. Like, we talked about, you know, a bit about Scully's role here. But yeah, she does seem moved by the at the end, doesn't she? So that's a good observation, I think, there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Clara Jean Cook got in touch to say, this is one of my favourite episodes. I like so many things about it, but one aspect of the episode I am most impressed with is the characterisation of Lucy Householder. She is both sympathetic and unsympathetic at the same time. She feels like a very real character. And yeah, we already said this, didn't we? But I agree. It feels totally authentic. So, like, it would be interesting to know, you know, maybe like what preparation the actress did, for example, to kind of get into character for this. You know, how exactly did she approach it? I'd love to know that.
Yeah, I wonder if she did any study, like maybe with former addicts or anything like that, to try and get that. Because, again, I just go back to that scene where she's eating the soup and just the way she's hunched over the bowl. Like, I just love her portrayal in this episode so much.
Do you remember her season 9 episode she appeared in, Audrey Pauly? Have you seen that?
That's the one at the house, right? The dollhouse or something?
Well, it's a... That's right. It's like a floating hospital in the sky is how you kind of see it.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember the episode very well. I vaguely remember it. I know her... Like, I know her from this. Like, this is the role that I know her for when I see her. She was in a Voyager episode as well. She was Icheb's mom. We find out that she was in a Star Trek Voyager episode as well. But this is the role that I associate her with. Like, you know, there's certain characters, certain character actors that you see everywhere, and I just associate them with the X-Files. You know, I don't know how to say his name exactly, but, you know, Zeljko Ivanek, like, whenever I see him, I think of Roland. You know, because he does such an amazing job in that episode. And there's a few people like that, that this is where I always will associate them from, is the X-Files.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of her, though, that season 9 one is, that's another good performance. And that's actually a pretty decent episode for season 9. So, yeah, worth checking out one day when you get the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. 2042 when we get there.
Yeah, on the X-Cast, yeah, definitely. Right, Andrew Blake has said that this is an underrated episode on the long-lasting effects of trauma and abuse. I think this episode is pretty underrated, even if it's not particularly memorable. I mean, I sort of disagree. I mean, I disagree that it's not memorable, but I can sort of see why somebody would think that, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I like finding those treasures on a rewatch, too. Like, you know, there's always those episodes that you forget about because, you know, they aren't ones that are memorable, but you watch them again, and it's like, why don't I remember this episode? It's so darn good.
Okay, Michael Little says, a wonderful hour of television with another of Duchovny's best performances. I love the irony of the moment in which the mother of the missing girl tells Mulder she has no idea how he feels. Obviously, that we mentioned that moment, didn't we, before? And Teresa Rother said, that poor lady just didn't have a chance. She just didn't. Her life was completely fucked, and her only way out was death. It was so sad. And last one for today is from Cortland Waters Bartley, who said, personally, I find this episode deeply unsettling, so it's not one that I rewatch frequently, even though it is technically a very good episode. One is important in Mulder's character arc. And I can definitely understand that. I can definitely understand somebody not choosing to watch this one, you know, not feeling the need to watch this one, you know, a lot. Because it's hard-hitting stuff, isn't it? So I definitely get that, you know.
Yeah, I know my comfort food X-Files episodes that I go to, and this is not one of the ones. Like, when X-Files hit 20, you know, I picked 5 episodes that I wanted to watch, you know, and they're some of my favorite episodes. So, you know, I watched Drive, and I watched William. I'm a big fan of William. I love that episode. You know, I watched Shapes. I watched Darkness okay. Falls. Yeah. Like, you know, like, those are my comfort food X-Files episodes. And Ice, like, those are probably my 5 favorite episodes of the X-Files, you know. So I'm all over the place with my fandom, and I get harassed for it. You know, Zach Moore is probably going to tweet me after this and say, blah, 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 Shapes or whatever. And I get the same one because I love Alternative Factor for the original Star Trek as well. Okay. So.
I'm stunned. William and Shapes are on your top. Okay. Never, anyway, I don't. Who am I to cast aspersions? Anyway. No, I mean, in terms of Oubliette, though, I mean, this would be probably in my top 5. It's right up there anyway. But at the same time, I do get the... I get why it's not on a lot of people's lists, I think. I understand it. Mm-hmm. Even if I, you know, differ myself. All right, Brendan. I mean, you specifically requested to undergo the X quiz, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'll just say straight away that, I mean, I didn't have time this week to, like, go through looking at license plates and that kind of thing. So these are pretty simple, I think. So it should be a 5 out of 5, to be honest. So, anything less than that, and I'll be disappointed, Brendan, all right?
Okay.
I actually gave one of the answers away during the rundown there as well, sadly. But anyway, question 1, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
What is the name of Amy's high school?
Oh. I don't know. I couldn't even venture a guess, so I'm disappointing you right off the bat. I'm so sorry.
I am disappointed. Valley Woods High School.
Valley Woods High School. I would have even said, like, as a guess, that it's probably named after a person, but I'm even wrong there.
Oh, well. That's, don't worry, there's four questions left for you to recover, so plenty of time. What is the name of the special agent in charge?
Larry.
Well, we don't... Okay, I'll give you another go, because we don't have his Christian name. We just have his surname, I think.
I don't even know. Oh, my goodness. I didn't. It's like I didn't even... I wrote down, like, other things here. I've got, like, numbers, and, like, I didn't put names.
Yeah. Well, he's referred to, I think, as Agent Eubanks.
Okay. All right?
Okay, so you're naught for two, as we stand.
Oh, you're stumping me. Good, good. This is great. I'm okay with that. I don't mind.
Question three is, what is Lucy's boyfriend, possibly ex-boyfriend, I don't think they clarify... what is he in prison for? They mentioned two things here.
I think it's robbery and assault, isn't it?
Well, one of them's assault, so I'll give you half a mark for that. It's assault and child endangerment is what they say.
Child, yeah, right, yes.
Yeah.
You know what I have down, you better ask me, is what's the name of the halfway house? Because I wrote that down.
Well, question four, and I actually slipped up and I said this in the episode, but it is, what is the name of the halfway house where Lucy is staying?
Bright Angel Halfway House.
Well done. All right. So that takes you to 1.5 out of 4. And oof, the final question is a quote. All right. So what I'm after is who said this, and if you could, like, describe roughly, like, the context of it.
Okay.
So the line is, "That's my name, isn't it?" That line again is,
"Oh my goodness."
"That's my name, isn't it?"
Lucy had to have said it when... I failed. No. I failed this test.
Well, yeah, you did, because it's not Lucy as it happens.
Oh, my goodness. This was,
this was Mulder to Scully.
Oh, yes. Spooky. Spooky. That's right. Oh, awesome. That's a great quiz. Good job. That's good.
Ah, well, yeah. Considering I kind of threw it together in 2 minutes. Yeah, not bad. Yeah, Scully... describes Lucy repeating Carl's words to Amy as spooky, and Mulder comes back and says, "That's my name, isn't it?" And that's probably the only moment of, like, humor in the episode, isn't it? I can't really think of any other quips or anything.
Mm-hmm, right.
All right, so 1.5 from a possible 5 is what I make it.
I'm okay with that.
Oh, well, it gives you, you know, something to top next time you come on the X-Cast, isn't it? So at least. So... All right, Brandon. So, where can people find you online? Do you want to tell? Do you want to plug your other podcasting endeavors as well?
Yeah, for sure. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You know, I tweet fairly regularly, and I've got a couple podcasts right now. I'm on Trek FM with a podcast called Warp 5, which is all about Star Trek Enterprise. And you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which is all about Alfred Hitchcock's movies. We're going through them one at a time.
Good stuff. Well, thanks very much for joining me on this one. Yeah, I'm really glad. I was wondering, because of you, I know you're renowned for some of your eccentric opinions, and I thought, if he comes in and he gives Oubliette like a 2 out of 10 or something, I thought, this is not, you know. But happily, we're on kind of the same page. So, yeah.
Well, sometimes the best discussions happen when people disagree. So, but no, I'm glad you love it too, because I find it such an underrated episode. And I'm glad that a lot of the listeners who commented in the Facebook group as well seem to think that it's an underrated episode. It shows that there is some love for it. And there are people who really do enjoy the episode. And tweet me if anybody wants to tell me about their love for Shapes.
Yeah, let us know if you get anyone take you up on that. But cheers, Brandon. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Thank you. I had a blast.
In the meantime, listeners, you can find us in the usual places, on Twitter at the X_cast, on Facebook, type in X-Files Basement, you'll find our fan group. If you get a minute and you can spare the time to rate us and review us on iTunes, that would be fantastic too. But until next time on the X-Cast, always remember, trust no one.
The X-Cast, an X-Files podcast, is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support the XCast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/the XCast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/thexcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A Y E.